You're listening to another top-rated radio show on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Welcome to the American Hour with your host, Commander Tom Garcia, on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Commander Tom Garcia, and this is the American Hour. You're listening to the USA Talk Radio Network, and I'm broadcasting live from Sao Paulo, Brazil. My co-hosts that are joining me today, the lovely Paula Luzon Osman, is broadcasting from Boston. How are you doing today, Paula?
Doing great. It's 80 degrees up here, but we've got a tornado warning that's just been issued for Franklin County and parts of Worcester this afternoon. They've been tracking some storms.
Oh, boy. Now, our other guest host today is Dick Birrenbach, who's joining us from Port Orange, Florida. How are you today, Dick?
I'm doing great, Tom. Thank you. We're enjoying some rain down here that we need sorely.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the lakes all around Central and South Florida are so low right now, it's terrible. And, yeah, I hope it's raining at my house. We got a little lake behind the house, and it just has gotten so low that it's I'm waiting for fish to start flopping around in it. So hopefully we'll get some rain, too. But, Paula, you're going to be leaving us halfway through the show, and one of the reasons we've got Dick. Dick frequently calls in, and we love having Dick on board, but he's actually going to be helping out specifically with the co-hosting services today. So, Paula, let everybody know why you're leaving the show early, because I know people aren't going to be happy about that.
Oh, well, I'm going into Cambridge this evening for a networking event, but also to learn about offshore wind in New England, lessons learned in the way forward. The northeastern part of this country is the world's premier opportunities for offshore wind energy. And the 1,000-mile coastline with a wide continental shelf on one side and major population centers on the other, offshore wind continues to advance, but Cape Wind's experience, which is about 10 years in the making, in developing the first major offshore site in this country, has shown that the challenges to further development are political and social as well as economic. Today, Wind Power Monthly put out a piece about how the Department of Energy rejected Cape Wind's most recent loan guarantee.
Wow, okay. Now, I just want to let people know, that's good. So when you get back tomorrow, or you're going to get back home today, but tomorrow on the show, we'll talk about what you found out there and what's really going on and what the lessons learned are and what people can expect in the future of offshore wind. So hopefully have some good information. I'm sure you will. We'll look forward to that. I just want to remind people that I am broadcasting from Brazil. There tends to be some background noise around here at times. There was a siren outside a little while ago, and the cleaning lady's going down the hallway making a bunch of noise. I apologize, but that's just the way it is when we have to broadcast from here. But along that line, we're going to be shifting to our summertime broadcasting, which will be Mondays and Wednesdays. So next week we'll be broadcasting Monday and then again on Wednesday. With kids out of school and summer vacations planned and other things, we are shifting to our summer broadcasting time frame. So we'll be doing that throughout the summer. So apologize if there's another day that you like listening. But you can always go and download past shows or stream them live over the internet in case you happen to miss a show. You don't actually have to be there. But live, if you want the opportunity to call in and talk with us directly or chat with us online while we're broadcasting, it'll be Monday through Wednesday, same time though, 4 p.m. in the afternoon. And that should also help with my scheduling so that I don't have to be broadcasting from all over the planet. And it's fun, and it sounds exotic sometimes, but it doesn't always work out the best. But we're glad that you're with us today, and we will move right on in the show. Now, the first thing I want to talk about is we got this story. It's not old news, but I picked something out of there that I think you probably weren't going to get from the news, and I found it interesting. And I think, unfortunately, a guy that I would never try to defend, Representative Anthony Weiner from New York, but I think I have to defend him on this one. You know, the news came out a couple days ago that he had allegedly, or somebody had, maybe hacked into his account on Twitter, Twittered out his Weiner's Weiner on Twitter. That sounds funny, doesn't it? Wiener's Wiener on Twitter. And anyway, whatever. But his spokesman said that his account was hacked. And he says, look, his account was obviously hacked. And that's the quote, obviously hacked. Now, the description of the photo is a man's bulging underwear, a close-up shot of a man's bulging underwear. So when his spokesman says that it was obviously hacked, I think what he's telling us is that can't possibly be Anthony Weiner's crotch shot. It had to be somebody else. So my guess is Anthony Weiner's crotch shot would look more like a little bump, and that's why his spokesman was able to say it obviously was hacked, because I don't know if there's any evidence contrary to that, but given the information that we have, I would have to probably agree. I can't imagine that Anthony Weiner's wiener in a Twitter shot would look like a bulging underwear. So we'll just throw that out there. You might not have caught that in the news, but I think the evidence is clear. His account was hacked. Also, a good friend of ours, Nick Taxia, Da Progressive. If you go to Da Progressive, that's DUHProgressive.com. He wrote an article, and this is a true op-ed. All of his op-eds are true, but this is a true op-ed. On a recent trip to San Diego, he unexpectedly saw the true fate of our nation. And I'm just going to give you a couple highlights of this. He goes through the whole thing explaining some of the different people that he saw there. And the animals were the typical animals you'd see, but boy, he was really shocked. And toward the end of the article, I'll just tell you this. I had come to see animals of the world. I left having seen the future of our country. I saw the San Diego Zoo in 50 years. I walked out of its gates in 2011 and saw what it would look like in 2061. The San Diego Zoo is 100 times larger, remodeled, synthetic, gaudy, banal, but large, incredibly large. The zoo is designed and built by the Saudis. It is owned by the Chinese. Brazilians provide its electricity. Indians run its marketing and customer service. Its janitors are still Mexican because they never bothered to learn Mandarin or Hindi. But regardless, they all will still have to bow five times a day to Mecca. The only tourists who will be able to afford tickets will be Indians and Koreans. The main exhibit will be the descendants of the Americans I saw in 2011, caged in with their neck tattoos, nipple piercings, collagen injections, hepatitis, diabetes, Lady Gaga granddaughter's album, and third grade reading capabilities. Out from the dark recesses of some nest in some cage, a man hollers out to the Asian tourist viewing him. I don't even know what he's saying there, so I'm not going to read that. But finally, and as for the U.S. soldier who gave his legs for his country, for the people now rightfully behind the fences and cages, the Korean War vet, the Colorado family, and the rest of us red-blooded, respectful, normal Americans, we will be found in the zoo, too, in the extinct section. Or perhaps I'm being too optimistic. So anyway, that's a long article. I just read a sliver of that. Go check it out at progressive.com. Nick Taxia, he comes out with some good articles that get you thinking. That's the bottom line, really get you thinking. And then we've got some other news to talk about. We'll save that towards the end. But what about today? Oh, one last piece of information. I want to throw this out right now. Last night, the House voted to not raise the debt limit. And the Democrats had pushed for a vote. You know, it's the old thing. Come on, let's have a vote. Let's have a vote. And then when the Republicans said, sure, why not? Then, wait a minute. Oh, this is just a stunt. This was a vote, whether to raise the debt limit or not, with no conditions, no preconditions, no conditions whatsoever. And now the Democrats are saying, well, this is just a big stunt. Well, that's what they asked for, and there were no conditions on it. It was just a straight vote. Boy, remember how the president was asking before on the budget and whether it be health care, et cetera, I just want a straight up or down vote. Come on, just give me a straight up or down vote. Guess what? The Republicans just gave the Democrats a straight up or down vote, and they lost in a huge landslide. Many, many Democrats came over to their side to say, nope, no to raising the debt limit with no preconditions. So really what they've gotten out of this, the Republicans have gotten, is they've robbed the Democrats of the chance to say Republicans are playing politics with the nation's credit limit. By offering the vote, Republicans will demonstrate that there is now broad bipartisan agreement that more debt must be matched with cuts. That, and here's the key, that will set the new bar for ongoing negotiations. Well, the Democrats tried to be the squeaky wheel and turned out, now they just kind of screwed themselves on their wanting to raise the debt limit without conditions. Well, we took the vote. What do you think about that, Dick?
My thoughts are all this crying the Democrats are doing, they have had a lot of time before the Republicans got back into power to come up with a budget. They had complete control, and they didn't do a thing with it.
Yeah. Well, first of all, the Democrats never even proposed a bill for this year, for 2011, you know, fiscal 2011. They didn't even propose a bill. It's clear what they wanted to do. They just wanted to spend money, spend. And then when we run out, hey, we'll just give ourselves some more, print some more money. That's absolutely unconscionable, I think. And as well, it's very irresponsible. So in any case, now what I've done is I've gone to the speech that Debbie Wasserman Schultz gave. Yesterday we outlined on the show, and if you missed it, you know, go ahead and take a listen to that. We outlined how Debbie Wasserman Schultz, seven lies in a very short interview. She very quickly lies repeatedly. And she's the one who said to her base that we want to hold people accountable for lying to the American about Democrats. So we're going to do that by focusing on the ninth commandment of the Ten Commandments, which is thou shalt not bear false witness. Debbie Wasserman Schultz doesn't want anybody bearing false witness against Democrats. She's really big on that ninth commandment. Of course, the sixth commandment, thou shalt not kill, she really doesn't care so much about that one because she's a huge abortion proponent. So killing unborn children. And here's what I got. Remember, Paula, we talked about, and you covered that by talking about Michelle Bachmann yesterday, but Debbie, what's her next lie, Schultz, said that Republicans are anti-woman. Now, Republicans are opposed, generally are opposed to abortion. Democrats and liberals are all for it. They want it on demand.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't 50% of the abortions be women or future women, young girls? So
yes.
The Democrat Party is the party for killing unborn women, and the Republican Party for stopping the killing of unborn women. And yet somehow the Republican Party is anti-woman and is waging a war on women. This is what the Democrats do. They lie. They take something so obvious, so clearly obvious, who is really assaulting womanhood, and they lie about it and make things up. Debbie, what's her next lie, Schultz, has no substance whatsoever. She never talks about substance. And when she does try and throw some substance in there, it's a distortion of the truth or an outright lie. And we're going to cover a little more of that today. We're going to lead to that point about health care. I know that the show is going to be, is health care a right? And I'm going to lead to that, but I just have to talk about her report to the Democrat National Committee. And she is the new chairman. So here's what she had to say. And she's talking about why it's so important for the Democrats to focus on certain issues. And she said, that's why this election is so important to the future of our country and our party. The party. See, this is the way they think. Their party is supremely important. Now, when she says the future of our country, that doesn't mean the people in the country, or that doesn't mean liberty or freedom or anything like that. She's just saying the country. We need to hold our country together in some socialistic format is what she wants. But her party. I don't think about my party. When I was campaigning for Congress as a Republican, and when I work as a Republican within the Republican Party, quite honestly, I don't give two hoots about the party. I care about conservatism and the Constitution, the rule of law, liberty, and freedom. That's what I care about. But Debbie Wasserman Schultz is supremely concerned about her party. So that's what she said here. This is why this election is so important to the future of our country and our party. I really don't care about the future of my party. I care about the future of my country. But she just can't let that go. Okay, she said, first, we will support the president's agenda. Hey, how's that been working for you so far? His socialistic agenda has done what? Well, I'm going to get to that. We're going to support the president's agenda and protect the progress we've made. Well, how's this for progress? First of all, the president's agenda is transforming the country by destroying the Constitution. And I've talked about that in the past. The only way you can fundamentally transform the United States of America is to get rid of the Constitution we have or just completely ignore it. So there's his agenda. Wow, that's really patriotic. And second of all, what kind of progress? Well, how about the progress of destroying our health care system or 9% unemployment or slipping into a depression here we're about to do, unsustainable debt, and entering a third war? That's progress, Debbie. You guys deserve a big pat on the back. And here she goes to say, we must trumpet President Obama's agenda from the rooftops. His agenda from the – trumpet it from the rooftops. His agenda for destroying this country. Oh, my gosh. It makes my stomach turn. But this is what they will do. They will lie, lie, lie. They'll say the economy is better. Remember, we did a whole show, I think, Paula, on the summer of recovery. Last summer was the summer of recovery. And yet – in May, we read how many different accounts in the news of unexpectedly higher unemployment, unexpectedly lower consumer confidence. It's all unexpected. But last summer was the summer of recovery. And the White House, Dick, even said last summer, boy, you might think that we don't need to keep pushing along with the stimulus and recovery because things are so great. I mean, they literally said that. The White House put out on the webpage. You might think that the recovery is over because things are so great now. Can you believe that? They just lie, one lie after another. And like our good friend Michael Cutler said on the show last week about immigration, but I think this applies to everything. So when it comes to everything that this administration is doing, so the president's agenda literally is for his second term. If at first you don't succeed, lie, lie again. And that's where she's going with this. But she continues on with the lies. We've come so far, but if left to their own devices, Republicans would repeal health care reform. Interesting. Wall Street reform and student loan reform. They would put insurance companies back in charge of our health care. Now, Dick, is your insurance company in charge of your health care?
No, I am.
Yeah, I am too. You know, my own doctor, I can go and use my health care insurance and pay him $30 copay, or I can write him a check for $40 with no copay and no insurance involved. Amazing.
Great.
Nobody's in charge of my health care except for me. And also the planning of how I would have health care and what I would do in my life. Well, I went into the military, so I will have TRICARE when I'm fully retired at 60 from the military. I plan for my health care. But anyway, the insurance companies would be back in charge of health care. They were never in charge of health care to begin with, and they won't be in charge of health care in the future. And allow financial institutions to police themselves. We had so much regulatory regulations over the financial institutions. They did not police themselves. They relied on the federal government to police them, and the federal government failed. And once again, crash our economy. Well, how can you crash it again when you're still in the middle of the crash, Dick? How can you crash it again? And how can you crash it again when this administration just keeps – we're in the middle of a crash, and they just keep hitting the accelerator pedal and trying to drive this car off the cliff even further. And then finally she says they would turn back the clock on all the progress we've made. And I go back to all the progress they've made, 9% unemployment, slipping into a depression, unsustainable debt, and entering a third war. All the progress we've made, and our children, parents, and neighbors would suffer. I'm not sure if what they're doing is worse, the things that I've mentioned, or the fact that they're piling the debt on our children and grandchildren. She seems to be very concerned about our children and parents and neighbors, and yet when it comes to our parents, the Democrats have cut over half a trillion dollars out of Medicare, and they've increased the debt that there's no way you and I can pay back, Dick, but it will be piled on top of our children and grandchildren. So there's another huge lie coming from her that the progress they've made is somehow saving the United States of America and saving our children. But if we let the Republicans follow the Constitution and reduce debt and put money back in Medicare, that's just going to destroy this nation and our children and our parents and our seniors and our neighbors. Does that make any sense to you at all?
I would have a couple questions for her if I could talk to her. I am not a very regular church-going person, but I do believe in God. I didn't know when the Ten Commandments were handed down that he said, pick and choose which ones you want to obey and throw the rest to the wind. If health care is so good for us, then why are the people in Washington exempt from it? Why do they have their own plan? If she is such a good person and is so good for us, she should turn down her health care and come on ours.
Yeah, exactly. Well, here's the good news, Dick and Paula. She then goes on to say, we are going to run on our accomplishments, and we won't allow the Republicans to undo or distort them. Oh, no, we're not going to distort them at all. We're going to hold up your accomplishments just like you are, your true accomplishments, and let the people judge for themselves, because your accomplishments are abysmal, absolutely abysmal. How about not doing a budget? I've mentioned that already today. They didn't do a budget for 2011. How irresponsible is it for an entire Democrat majority to say, we're not going to do a budget. We're just going to allocate and appropriate money for the year, but we're not going to do a budget so that we don't have to live within any constraints. There's an accomplishment, Debbie. Wow, pat yourself on the back, you loser. All right. Here's what she goes on to say. Eleanor Roosevelt told the New York State Democrat Party in an event like this one what to expect of the GOP. She said, never forget that the Republican Party is the party that looks backwards. Backwards. Like maybe to, let's see, the Constitution and our founders? Yeah, that's really, really bad. But the Democrat Party is the party that looks forward to socialism, Marxism, communism. Yeah, let's look forward to that stuff. Let's progress. So here's what she has to say, and this is what I'm getting there, believe me. I'm getting there to the healthcare thing. But she said, we have come too far to turn back the progress Democrats have made. So let's remember it was Democrats. Here's lie number one. It was Democrats who ended the Great Depression. Well, Paul and I did an entire show on the Great Depression. It was Democrats that got us into it. Herbert Hoover, yes, was a Republican, but what was it he did that got us into the, that started it? He put huge amounts of tariffs on exports, so we started to become an isolationist somewhat country and really cut off our economic hands, okay, and then started raising taxes. Does that sound like a Republican, Dick? Huge tariffs and raising taxes. That's not the Republican way at all. That's not the conservative way at all. So that's what Herbert Hoover started. And then, by his own admission, FDR continued those policies. That's not what he ran on. So here's another typical Democrat who will run on one thing. I'm going to cut taxes and cut tariffs, and then actually increases them. Lying Democrats. We did a whole show on the Depression, and what we discovered during that show was not only did Democrats continue the Depression, they created a Depression within a Depression. Debbie Wasserman Schultz would like to rewrite history, but unfortunately she can't. The facts and the truth are there. Democrats got us deeper into the Depression and then created a second Depression within a Depression. And it was only after the Supreme Court overturned two of FDR's major pieces of legislation as unconstitutional that did the country start turning around. Democrats established Social Security and Medicare. And what is it that everybody is saying today? They're unsustainable. Thank you for creating something unsustainable, Democrats. You deserve a pat on the back. She said, goes on to say, Democrats protected the rights of workers to organize. Paula, you live in Massachusetts. What did the state legislature recently do to public sector unions?
They voted
to take away their collective bargaining rights. And they're a Democrat legislature. So when Debbie says that they've protected the rights of workers to organize, they haven't protected the rights of workers to organize, not in the public sector at all. And in the private sector, the federal government does more to harm the private sector with the Railway Labor Act and the other, I can't think of the other one right now, but it does more to harm, because I'm in the private sector, I'm in the private sector union, and the government does more to harm my collective bargaining rights in the private sector. But in the public sector, oh no, the Democrats have done a great job at protecting the rights of public sector unions at the expense of the voters and constituents. And so big government always is more important than the people themselves. Now here's a good one. Lie number two. It's Democrats who cleaned our air and our water. Cleaned them. Got them clean. It was Democrats. Not Republicans in any way, but Democrats. Well, let me tell you a little story about DDT. I'm sure you remember this, Dick. DDT was what we used to kill bugs, particularly mosquitoes that carried malaria. And we used to have malaria in the U.S. and even in Canada, if you can believe that. DDT. But we got our lefty liberals and Democrats that got together and worked to eliminate it and make it outlawed in the U.S. Now, if you go back to World War II, we lathered up our soldiers with DDT when they fought in the jungles of Burma and the Philippines. They didn't come down with any particular problems like with the Agent Orange or anything like that. Okay, it used to be dropped on every major American city in the 30s and 40s to kill malaria. Now, it was our lefty liberals that helped get it banned in the States. Once it was banned in the States, it was banned. Other countries ended up banning it as well throughout the free world. Once it's banned in the free world markets, there's nobody to produce it. And guess what? Africa went without DDT. Southeast Asia went without DDT. And so environmentalists succeeded in allowing the deaths of tens of millions of people. Thanks to them. We don't have malaria in the U.S. anymore, but the countries that needed it couldn't get it. Tens of millions have died of malaria around the world. Tens of millions. Good job, Debbie. Your party is the party of killings of tens of millions of people around the world. You really succeeded quite well at that by banning something that had no proven harm whatsoever to mankind. Democrats, she goes on, Democrats have defended our rights to organize and mobilize, protest and picket for the rights and freedoms we enjoy today. Well, if they're so big about protesting, picketing for our rights and freedoms and mobilizing and organizing to defend our rights, why is it they're trying to shut down conservative talk radio? Why is it that Debbie Wasserman Schultz, by her own admission yesterday in the soundbite we played, and we won't ever do that again because I know it's very, very difficult to listen to her speak, but she admitted a gag order, admitting to proposing a gag order on discussing illegal immigration because, as she said, quote, the Republicans will try to make an issue out of it. Debbie, have you been to Arizona? It's an issue whether you want to make an issue out of it or not. So they're willing to defend the rights for free speech and organizing and protesting as long as it's liberals doing it and unions doing it. But if conservatives want to do it, like Tea Partiers, they're racist, they must be stopped, they must be not, you know, portrayed in the media, and on and on and on. So she's a hypocrite when it comes to that. So there's a few lies from her, much hypocrisy, and much rewriting of history. Now, here's before I get finally to healthcare, and that's almost there, here's what she said. And it jumped ahead in her speech, but I wanted to jump ahead because I'm going to finish off with her comment on healthcare. We must remind the people that Democrats invest in jobs for today and tomorrow. Democrats – now, Dick, how do Democrats invest in jobs for today and tomorrow?
I thought it was the private sector that invested in jobs, not the federal government.
Right. Well, the federal government does by taking money out of the private sector. And guess what? We've learned that the stimulus money, in large part, in vast large part, has invested in public sector unions and floundering states, putting them on the dole. Yeah, they did a great job of investing in jobs for today and tomorrow. No, basically paying off those people that support them in their election. That's called corporate and political cronyism. So, yeah, let's remind the American people of what the Democrats engage in, political and corporate cronyism. We must remind them that the Democrats represent their interests. Yep, always looking out for the little one. We must remind them that it is Democrats who care for the health and welfare of the people and our planet. The health and welfare. How about the health? Let's see. You cut over $500 billion out of Medicare. I'm not sure how that adds up, how you're caring for the health of our seniors by cutting that out. Oh, wait, no, you put it into Medicaid, which serves illegal immigrants and, yes, poor people, and I'm all for that, but it also serves a lot of illegal immigrants. That's where they get their money. Illegal immigrants don't get their services covered when they go into an emergency room, et cetera, by Medicare. It's by Medicaid. So they just help the illegal immigration policy at the expense of our seniors. Good job, Democrats, looking out for the American people. Oh, wait a minute. She didn't say the American people. She said we make health care – I'm sorry. She said we care for the health and welfare of the people. The people. She didn't say American citizens. So we're really looking out for everybody around the planet that we can help out, really, except for the American people. And then backing up in her speech, but this was the killer that got me going today. It was Democrats who finally made health care a right, not a privilege. Well, let's take a look at that. A right. Debbie Wasserman Schultz now says that health care is a right. It can be a right. It can be a civil right. But there's a difference between civil and natural rights. And I'm going to refer to somebody who wrote a very good paper, article. Not so much an article that was published, but it was more like a very lengthy, quite honestly, probably analysis and white paper on life, liberty, and property rights. And it's written by Luigi Marco Pisani, and the actual title is Life, Liberty, and Jefferson on Property Rights. So bear with me. We're going to step through this. It's not too, too long, but it's very important to talk about this. And I know that, Paula, you pretty much have to go. So we're going to let you take off, say goodbye to you. Good luck at your symposium, and we look forward to hearing from you tomorrow about what went on.
Thank you, gentlemen. You have a good night, too. I really appreciate it.
You too,
Paula.
All right.
Take care, Paula. Thanks for being with us.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
So here we go, Dick. The unifying element of the entire corpus of Jeffersonian political thought, and above all of the transition from rights of man to those of states in a continuum of reflections on political affairs and institutions, is his unreserved support for the doctrine of natural law. Natural law. He believed that safeguarding the rights of man was the end, and here's the key, limit of the powers granted to the federal government. In other words, the only purpose for the federal government really is to secure and safeguard our natural rights, rights such as life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness. That's what it talks about in the Declaration of Independence. He didn't believe, as neither did any of our founders, that it was the purpose of the federal government to create new rights and to provide those. And we'll talk at the end of this discussion, my own discussion, not Mr. Bassani's, but my own discussion between the difference between providing and protecting. But this is really the key. The Safeguard the Rights of Man was the end of the powers granted to the federal government. So what was the purpose of the Declaration of Independence? I mean, you know, when you talk about controlling the government, the federal government, so that the end, the limit of their power is simply safeguarding the natural rights of man, that's the Constitution. But we arrived at our Constitution to do just that via the Declaration of Independence, and that establishes the baseline for what we would want a government to do. So here we go. The idea expressed in clear terms in the Declaration itself is that the only legitimate end of government is that of assuring rights whose origin precedes any law written down by men. This is the key. Men are already endowed with all of their rights prior to entering into a state of society. The question of civil rights, those that derive only from man's leap into a political society, is, in this framework of thought, vastly different from the facile opposition between civil rights and natural rights. Now, I want to make this clear to people out there. We talk about civil rights. Do not confuse something like what we call the move for civil rights for blacks in our country in the 60s, that started long before that, but in the 60s, that came to a head in the 60s, that was not a fight for civil rights. It's been deemed civil rights because the left would like you to believe that that was a civil right. That was a natural, unalienable right given to all men, regardless of color, by God. That was a natural right, that they had the right to everybody, everything that was available in society, not because of their skin color, but because they are a man or woman. So that really was not a civil rights fight. It was a natural rights fight. And we used the civil system to achieve that. But do not confuse civil rights with natural God-given rights. Civil rights are rights that government would like to bestow upon us because, and we're going to get to it. Mr. Bassani does a great job of explaining that. And in the next paragraph, he does. For there is but one and only one civil right, and this is important. I'm going to say it again. There is one and only one civil right. It arises with the very genesis of political society, and it is the individual right to be protected in the enjoyment of one's natural rights. And that's all the quote civil rights movement did, was to ensure the enjoyment of one's natural rights that had been abrogated in the case of blacks in our nation. But that's a natural right. It's not a civil right. Individuals who have entered into political society have a global civil right, vis-a-vis the government, the right to, and that, what does vis-a-vis mean? Civil right, vis-a-vis in regards to the government. This is what we're going to talk about, because there are, you know, there may be other global civil rights, but vis-a-vis the government. In regards to the government, the right to enjoy protection, not of artificial rights, and here's the key. Now we're going to talk about civil rights, not the right to enjoy protection, the right to enjoy protection, not of artificial rights, where the fruits of changing circumstances and of the preferences of lawmakers, but of their natural rights. They are always endowed, now we're going to talk about the whole revolution concept, they're always endowed with a further natural right, which, by its very nature, cannot be the object of a contract. You can never make this contract, Dick, with a government. And this is the right of resistance, the right to revolution, their right to protection, not by the government, but against the government. So Debbie Schultz, would like us to believe that health care is a right. Health care is not something that we come into this world with. Health care is something we must be provided with. So what she's saying is the government would have to provide it. If it's truly a right, the government will have to provide it. That is not a natural right. Natural rights are not provided. We already have them. So let me go a little bit further into this, but that's the key. We have the right to protection, not by the government, but against the government. That's what the Declaration of Independence tells us. That's what the Constitution does for us. A lot of people,
and that
like
is what is
think,
scaring the daylights out of our president.
Yes. A lot of liberals would like you to think you can distinguish between property rights and personal rights. In other words, the Declaration of Independence is all about personal rights, but the Constitution is all about protecting property rights. That is not true. They go hand in hand. They are the same thing. And I'll explain that here in a moment. And the way I'm going to explain that is, what is it that our president has said? He wants to spread the wealth, redistribution of wealth. Well, here's what Mr. Bassani has to say about that. And this is how they divide up personal and property rights, and that they tell you that personal rights must always trump property rights. The redistribution of wealth by means of legislative assemblies is a practice that dates from fairly recent times. From the theoretical point of view, it was unknown in the revolutionary era. The idea that property was endowed with a characteristic that approached sacrality was closely connected with the love of freedom. As Edmund Morgan put it, for 18th century Americans, property and liberty were one and inseparable, because property was the only foundation yet conceived for security of life and liberty. Without security for its property, it was thought no man could live or be free except at the mercy of another. What is socialism and communism and Marxism? It's security at the mercy of another, and in this case, at the mercy of the government. So we would like people to believe that the government can provide everything you need, not we. Debbie, what's her next lie? Schultz would like you to believe that the government can provide everything you need, and as time goes on, we will determine that there are more things that you have a right to, more and more things that you have a right to, and the government will gladly provide it. But what did I used to say on the campaign trail, Dick? You've got to pay a price for that. In exchange for the government doing more for you, you've got to give up more and more of your personal liberty, your family's liberty, your property. And the more you give up, liberty is a shield against tyranny. And the more you give up in exchange for the government doing things for you, the more of that shield you give up, and eventually you no longer have protection. But now the government has all the protection, and you're screwed. Okay, so let's talk about what I said earlier, provide versus protect. Does the government, or does the Constitution, or does anybody provide speech for you? No, they protect it. The Constitution protects the freedom of speech. Does the government provide religion? No, it protects it. How about property? No, you earn it, you get it, you make it, etc. And what does the government do? It protects your property. That's what the Declaration of Independence is about, and the Constitution is designed for the government to protect what you have or what action you may take, but not to provide it. Do Americans have the right to a house, Dick?
A right? No.
No. No, they don't have a right to a house. But let me tell you about a country where you do have a right to a house. That would be Bolivia. When Evo Morales, the self-avowed Marxist and would love to have a communist country, but he's certainly a Marxist, said when he was campaigning that he would give everybody, every poor person who had nothing to purchase a house or even rent a house, would get a house. When he realized the monumental task of that after being elected, and he couldn't do it, guess what he did? He said anybody with a spare bedroom or a room they're not using in their house will be given to a poor family. And not to just reside there, they would own it. So, Dick, do you have any spare bedrooms in your house?
As of this second, no.
Okay, let's just say
I do.
You've got
I
a
have
spare
two
bedroom.
Spare bedrooms.
Yeah. Well, and we have a couple spare bedrooms. Can you imagine the government saying it's a right to have a house? It's a right, but we can't provide an actual structure for everybody. So, Dick, you have two spare bedrooms. We're going to let two poor families move in, and those are their rooms. They own them now. They own them. And if they want to raise chickens in that room, they do whatever they want. And they come and go, and they now are part owners in your house. Sorry, that's the way it is. That's the way government provides things. When it says you have a right to a house, like Evo Morales said, then that's what the government does to you. What about food? Do people have a right to food?
Nope.
Will they need it? They certainly need it, but I don't know that there's – yeah, well, we typically earn that. We work for that. And of course, we have charities to take care of people that have it, but the government so far hasn't said that we have a right to food. But what if the government said food is a right and that grocery stores will give food to poor people without pay? Sorry, you're going to have to do it. You'd see a lot of grocery stores close up and, you know, whatever. Or maybe they just come to us, Dick, and they say, every time you buy a piece of food, you're going to pay a tax or you're going to give a portion of that food to somebody poor. Well, health care is a right. The problem is health care is not something that we can say, well, it's a right and you have to have it, and therefore people that provide it are just going to provide it. Government must provide it. Does government protect healthcare right now? Well, they have regulations regarding it, but government hasn't been in the business of protecting it. In other words, when I go to a doctor and say, hey, I need help, I maybe don't feel good, or can you check me out and here's some money, or I have insurance, what does the doctor say? Does the doctor look at me and say, I don't like your looks, I'm not going to help you? Well, he could if he said, you know, I don't like the color of your skin, then the government would protect that. That's a natural right that as a consumer, if I go to purchase something or do something, I can't be denied because of the color of my skin. So, but to say that, gee, I just can't afford it, well, I can't provide you something because if you don't have the money, now government must provide it. And I can tell you this, Dick, if I didn't have any health care right now and I didn't have any food, I'd die a lot faster from the lack of food. But Debbie Wasserman Schultz doesn't think food is a right, but she thinks health care is a right. It's not a right. It was never intended. The Declaration of Independence makes it clear that our government was formed in order to protect the natural rights of man and not create a whole new slew of rights, illegitimate rights. Here's something that I got off of another site, and just kind of wrap things up on this now. Observe that all legitimate rights have one thing in common. They are rights to action. You know, so like property, I have the right to purchase property and maintain property, and nobody can take that away from me. Religion, speech, the color of my skin. The American rights impose no obligations on other people. So think about the rights, life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. Does that impose an obligation on anybody else? Does the Declaration of Independence, Dick, impose any obligations on anyone else other than myself?
No, it doesn't.
No, absolutely not. So the system guarantees you the chance to work for what you want, not to be given it without effort by somebody else. So now, I don't come on the show and point finger and explain something, how somebody's wrong, without having a solution. And what is the solution? The solution is the states. It's the states. It's always been the states. Why is it that Americans focus so much on the federal legislature and not their state legislatures? Most Americans can't tell you who their state legislator is. A lot of them can't tell you who their federal legislator is, but they definitely can't tell you who their state legislator is, and they don't know what's going on at the state level. And there's a reason for that. The federal government has taken on a greater and greater role, not the way it was intended, and that's why our system is so upside down right now. When you have a structure that's designed to have a minimalistic federal government that protects our natural rights and states that are there to create and protect and get involved with civil rights, but they're not doing it, the federal is, then the structure is going to fail because it was not designed to handle that. So let me tell you what Thomas Jefferson had to say about the states. Jefferson was from the Republican Party. They called themselves also Democrats with a small d, because they believed in a Republican form of system, but at the same time, they believed in democracy. Not a democracy in the terms of how we vote, because that always turns into mob rule. I'll just make that little statement there. But they put emphasis on state rights. That's how Jefferson got elected in his first term. It was a huge state right issue at the time, with the federal government trying to grab too much power. Imagine that. And that was in, you know, 1798, 1799, as they're leading up to the election. State rights were a big issue. Are they a big issue today? Look at health care and how many states are filing lawsuits against the federal government. In any case, Jefferson felt that the country was too big, and what, they had 13 states, 13 former colonies, now 13 states, much smaller than we are today. And Jefferson felt that the country was too big to have all of its affairs directed by one government. He also felt that the common people should have the power. That's what the Democrats are all about, the common people, the little people having the power. Well, the way they have it is the state government should have more power because they know their people better. And that's the truth. I mean, states' rights have become an issue. But Debbie Wasserman Schultz doesn't believe in states' rights. She believes in a bigger federal government, a government that does everything for us and creates new rights, new civil rights that have nothing to do with natural rights. So in essence, she believes in socialism, and I'm going to read the definition of socialism in case anybody is unclear about it. It's a theory or system of social organization that advocates the vesting of the ownership and control of the means of production, distribution, capital and land, etc., in the community as a whole, in other words, in the government. In other words, we are going to control the economy, the government's going to, not the people, but the government. We're going to vest that control in the government. That is not the U.S. Constitution. That was not the Declaration of Independence. The Constitution Article 4, Section 4 says that the federal government guarantees to each and every state a Republican form of government. Socialism, Debbie, what's your next lie, Schultz, is not a form of a Republican form of government. Socialism violates not only the Constitution, but it's not in spirit with the law and the letter of the Declaration of Independence. So I hope I made it clear. To sum it up real quickly, the Declaration of Independence talks about natural law, life, liberty, pursuit of happiness, and that the only role of government is to protect that, not to create all kinds of new civil rights. But the states do have the power. The states themselves do have the power to tackle things like health care reform, etc. The federal government, because of its wide-ranging regulatory agencies these days, can get involved in certain aspects of it, but it's got to be the states that take the lead and the role on this. Now, some people say, well, if the states don't, then the federal government has to. No, they don't. The federal government doesn't have the authority. And I will finish this up with my favorite quote from Thomas Jefferson, and I'm not reading this. You've heard me say it many times, Dick. Thomas Jefferson said they are not to do anything they please to provide for the general welfare, talking about the Congress and the federal government, giving the distinct and independent power the authority to do whatever would be good for the Union renders all preceding and subsequent enumerations of power completely useless. And this is what we're seeing going on today. We have a federal government that is using the Commerce Clause to provide for the general welfare, in essence. What's good? Debbie Wasserman Schultz, we've created a right, a new right, health care, and the government's going to force that down your throat and make sure that it's your new right and you're going to pay for it, and we're going to redistribute wealth to make sure that you pay for it. And Thomas Jefferson warned us against that. He said, if we do that, if we allow the federal government to do that, it destroys literally the whole rest of the government. So Debbie Wasserman Schultz was correct. She is absolutely going to support the president's agenda to destroy our Constitution and transform our nation into a European-style or Marxist-style nation. Why she thinks that's good? She's deluded. She's not very smart. She's not too bright. So Debbie Wasserman Schultz, please, yes, stick by the president's agenda, push that, and definitely push the Democrats' accomplishments, because you have accomplished nothing and you are only on the path to destroying our nation. I will support conservatism, the Constitution. If you think I'm looking backwards, you're right, because Thomas Jefferson, James Madison, George Washington, John Adams were all much smarter than you, way smarter than you. If they were here today, they would lambast you for violating your oath of office as being a congresswoman. The fact that you are now going to run as a congresswoman again to retain your seat, and yet you are also chairman of the Democrat National Committee, shows the shameless desire for power that she has, and to be in control and to not look out for her constituents. And I'm glad she's doing it, because she does a crappy job as a congresswoman. She's going to do a double crappy job as a congresswoman and as a DNC chair. I couldn't think of a better person to represent the Democratic Party than her. Miss Abrasive, Miss Lie on almost every issue that she talks about, Miss Rewrite History, Miss Does Not Believe in the Declaration of Independence, and Does Not Believe in the Constitution of the United States. Whew, there we go, Dick.
Now, can I have a couple minutes? I'd like to point something out that I think shows where our entire country is going. It was an article written by a man by the name of Frosty Woodbridge. He is a journalist, a writer, and an environmentalist. And what he's talking about is Detroit, Michigan, in the mid-1970s to 1990. Now, we all know at one time Detroit, Michigan was one of our great, mighty cities. Anything that was to be had could be had in Detroit. He says, I watched it descend into the abyss of crime, debauchery, gunplay, drugs, school, truancy, carjacking, gangs, human depravity. I watched entire city blocks burned out. I watched graffiti explode on buildings, cars, trucks, buses, and schoolyards. Trash everywhere. Detroiters walked through it, tossed more into it, and ignored it. Tens of thousands and then hundreds of thousands today exist on federal welfare, free housing, and food stamps. A new child meant a new car payment, a new TV, or whatever mom wanted. I saw Lyndon Baines Johnson's Great Society flourish in Detroit. If you give money for doing nothing, you will get more hands out taking money for doing nothing.
Yeah.
It's a great article. At one point, Detroit plummeted from 1.8 million citizens to 912,000 today. At
wow.
the same time, legal and illegal immigrants converged on the city so much so that Muslims number over 300,000. Mexicans number 400,000.
Yeah.
It's what it amounts to is the more government hands out, puts people on the public dole, the more they're going to do nothing and the more our country is going to go down.
Yeah. Yep.
I am
you,
one that
have you met
is,
Sharon Day before?
No.
Oh, go ahead. Well, Sharon Day is now the Republican National Committee co-chairwoman. Well, co-chairman, but she's a chairwoman, yeah. And she had run for the position of chairman of the Republican Party of Florida. And a lot of people support her. I've met her. She's a very nice lady, and she's now the co-chair for the RNC. But she responded to Debbie, what's her next lie, Schultz's statement that the GOP is anti-woman. I talked about that in a little beginning, but I think it's worth looking at and recap some of the things that I've actually talked about already today. But she says, as a mother, grandmother, and fellow Floridian, Congresswoman Wasserman Schultz's comments clearly show she is out of touch with women and her South Florida constituents. And I think this goes along with what you've been saying is that, you know, number one, women are concerned about – their number one concern is the economy. But here's another one. Women, unlike the congressman may think, are more concerned about the unconscionable debt that this president is putting on our children and grandchildren. The Obama administration's reckless spending sells our future generations short. So I just want to throw that out there that Sharon Day did put out a pretty good letter thrown back to her. And think about what's her next lie, Schultz, is she never has any substance. And when, like I said earlier, when she does actually throw a fact out there, it's always a lie, always a lie. But typically she'll throw something out there that has no facts. It's just a statement. You know, the Republican Party is anti-woman. So that's her statement. But no substance to that one. When she does finally throw some kind of a fact out there to create some substance, it's always a lie, always a lie. So anyway, I don't know. What else did you have to think about where the country's going, Dick? Anything else?
I think we're going to recover. I really do. There's a lot of people waking up. A lot of people have been sleeping, like you say. They don't know who their congressman is. They don't know who their state representative is. We've been sleeping and letting politics do their thing. And that has been our mistake. My generation committed that. We've got to wake up. We've got to see what they're doing. And I don't really believe we will see any change until every elected official, including judges, are on term limits. Maximum two terms, and you're done. No special retirement for you. You hope you've got a good education, and you can support yourself when your term in office is over. You won't get any special treatment. When you served in the military,
exactly.
you risked your life. You weren't looking for any special bonuses when you retired or when you left the service.
No.
That is real service to the country, what a politician is supposed to do.
Yeah. Well, I just came – Steve Rosenblum, our good friend who does the Republican conservative – let me make sure I get it right – the Republican Conservative Forum on Blog Talk, and he's on the USA Network. You can go to usaradionetwork.com and find him as well as his co-host, Daria DiGiovanni, and information about them. They broadcast every day at 2 o'clock, and then again at 6 p.m. on the weekend. That's when they have their big guests on. He sent me a quick link. He usually tunes in and listens to what we're talking about. He sent me a link. This is a good one. It's on Hot Air, and written by our friend Ed Morrissey. I know Ed Morrissey from CPAC and interviewing with him, and he's actually when I was running for Congress, he put a few things of mine and even a video, I think, a couple videos, one interviewing me as well as one that I had just posted on YouTube onto his site, but Hot Air. But anyways, the article here is that Wasserman Schultz threw truth to the wolves, and it's it's all about the lies that she's put out recently. This came out today, actually. Oh, this is an article that just came out today, June 1st, by Ed Morrissey. So go check that out at Hot Air, but it just rips her apart. I have to say it. She just really is a pathological liar, and she has a – this is the problem with liberals, Dick, and I'm sure you've figured this out over the years. They'll say and do whatever it takes. It's the end justifies the means. The problem is the end usually is a destructive end for us. So it's not even a good end, but they get on a bend, something they believe in, and they will never listen to facts. And even if they determine that it's not a good end for us or a particular good thing in the end, they don't care. They just got to keep pressing forward with it because that's the deal. And they'll just lie and lie and lie all they can to try and make it a reality. So go to hotair.com and take a look at Ed Morrissey's article on Debbie, what's her next lie, Schultz. You'll find out what her next lies are.
I heard something the other day. And it made me laugh. This is about when Obama was in Ireland. And he is claiming now that he has Irish roots or ancestors.
Yeah.
And apparently he is also claiming he is now the first Irish president. Excuse me.
Oh, no.
Isn't the name Kennedy Irish?
Yeah, there's plenty of past presidents that had more Irish in them than he's got in himself. And if he's trying to claim that he's got more Irish than anybody else, well, then what is it? Are you Kenyan? Are you black? Are you African? What is it? What are you? Man.
It all depends on where the votes are. That's where he is.
Yeah. Boy, oh boy. So go ahead, Dick.
With all of the information that's coming out today on the Internet, I don't see how the voters can support a lady like this if you just sit and listen to her and stop and think for a minute. Look at the position our country is in and then decide who's right.
Yeah.
It doesn't take a rocket scientist.
No. Nope, not at all. Well, I said I was going to play something, and I may not have announced that at the beginning of the show here, but I did say that I was going to talk about, let's see, oh yeah, this was, maybe I meant to bring this up, I don't know, but in the meantime, Biden, Joe Biden, really working hard for the country. Joe Biden is being touted as the White House point man on the budget, leading the discussion with Congress on our nation's leaders to try and come up with a plan to slash the deficit and avoid defaulting. So Biden got a glowing profile in USA Today about his unique qualifications for honchoing negotiations. I can't imagine he has any unique qualifications whatsoever. He seems like, as Mark Levin has said on his own show, he's the dumbest vice president we've ever had, and that only comes in second to the dumbest senator we've ever had, also Joe Biden. I just can't see how he has any qualifications whatsoever. But anyway, so here's the takeout on that he's got all these qualifications. It's a tall order, just the sort of task Joe Biden, 68, has taken on for a president who chose him largely for his foreign policy credentials. In the 28 months Obama and Biden have served together, the vice president's role has grown to include many of the thorniest issues on the president's plate. Now, with Congress back in town as of, what is today, Wednesday? As of yesterday, bargainers are set to stream back to the table, roll up their sleeves, and start hashing through the numbers. Biden will be leading the charge. Wait a second. No, he won't. He's back on the foreign policy tour. He's going to be going to Italy to help support the 150th anniversary of unification in Italy on Thursday, June 2nd. So he's back on a whirlwind tour with his wife of Europe. And, we don't really need to worry too much about the budget. That'll take care of itself. We don't need Joe Biden there. The reality is we don't need Joe Biden there. I think the more time he spends out of the country, the better we are. And I wish the president would join him as well. But that was a little article there in it's called the White House Dossier, Accountability the Mainstream Media Forgets to Provide. And you can go to whitehousedossier.com and look that up. And I'm sure they've got some other good articles there. But I then saw this article about Sarah Palin wanting to, and I'm not going to get into this, but it talks about wanting to end ethanol subsidies. Ethanol pollutes more than gasoline on a per-mile basis. Ethanol is more costly than gasoline, so that's why the government has to subsidize it, Dick. There's no way that it pays to produce ethanol to replace gasoline. It actually costs more than gasoline, even with the high prices today. So why should we subsidize something like that? The idea was, well, we're saving the planet. It pollutes more than gasoline. And the reason it pollutes more is what the government did. This is how our government does us favors, especially the lefties and the Democrats, is they say, well, a gallon of ethanol puts out less of this and less of that. There are things that it puts out more than gasoline, like nitrous oxide and other things like that that are harmful to the atmosphere. But when it comes to CO2, it puts out less per gallon. But guess what? The gas mileage is not the same. It's not as good. Gas mileage is terrible with ethanol. You need more ethanol. So to actually drive your car the same distance as with gasoline, you're polluting more. You know, you can always twist numbers around. So people were jumping on Sarah Palin about wanting to end ethanol subsidies when, in fact, it's a complete waste of taxpayer money, a complete waste of it. Now,
ethanol is a corn product, is it not?
Yes. Yes, it is. Well,
okay.
It's in the U.S. We originate with corn, and we have to then first turn it into sugar, which is a process in its own. Then we can distill it to turn it into alcohol, which we call ethanol, a type of alcohol we call ethanol. Whereas one of the bloggers I saw was saying, well, they do it in Brazil. Yeah, they start off with cane sugar. It's already in a sugar form. We start off with corn that's in a starch form. So it's a much more expensive process. That's why it has to be subsidized in the U.S. and not subsidized in Brazil.
If you're wondering why we're on ethanol, I think you have to follow the head and see if you can find the tail. The tail would be the corn industry that wants to push the price of their product higher so they can make more money.
Right. When they get subsidies, they make more from a bushel of corn than they do for selling it for cattle feed or any
of
other
course.
Kind of feed. So why are we subsidizing an industry so that they can just get wealthier and richer? Why isn't the president out there going, those big, bad farmers getting their subsidies? When in fact they are getting actual subsidies. The oil companies aren't getting any subsidies. They're just getting the same tax breaks that every other manufacturing sector industry gets. But the farmers, they're getting actual subsidies. They could sell their corn for feed, animal feed, and still make a living. But we're helping them enrich themselves. And, of course, they're pushing and lobbying for it. Oh, the big, bad lobbyists. Those farmers have hired lobbyists. They're mean and evil so they can get more money. Where's the Democrats talking about that? Yeah. The political and corporate cronyism going on within the Democrat Party is at all-time high. Now, I wanted to
finish about
up
Mr. Biden for a second. I've found over the years, when a man is running for president, he looks to a state that is weak that he wants support from. And there he will pick his vice president to get that state's vote. And basically, a vice president is a sit in your chair, keep your mouth shut, and don't interfere with what I'm doing as president.
Yeah, you're right. And that's precisely why they do it. Back in the old days, the vice president was elected separately.
Yes.
So you could have ended with a Republican and a Democrat in the White House, one as president, one as vice president, and never, ever agreeing on anything. But we don't do it that way anymore. Now, I don't know if you saw it on Channel 13 on Sunday, but at 5 p.m., our friend George Taylor was on. I had made the sort of leading announcement a few weeks ago that George Taylor would come on, and he had a big announcement. Well, I'll tell you what the big announcement was. The big announcement was with the state legislature, both the House and the Senate, had written a budget bill and included in it $12 million for the National Veterans Homeless Support Organization. They do a fantastic job in Central Florida working with homeless vets to get them back on their feet and back into society. It's not just a charity organization. It's a working organization manned by volunteers. And the reason the state looked at them is they wanted to do something about homeless veterans because we have the second largest population in the country, but also because their cost to benefit ratio is so much higher than any other organization that deals in this. So they went to the National Veterans Homeless Support, the NVHS, and said, how are you guys able to do this this work so cheaply? They are a charitable organization, and they do file as a charity, but they looked at their cost structure, what administrative costs were, et cetera. They're all volunteers. They really only spend money on the vets and helping the vets and anything that will help them. Their office is donated to them by an organization. They're actually located in, I can't think of the name of the hospital now. It's just down south of Titusville. And in any case, most everything is donated to them. Okay. So they said, well, geez, if you could continue this with what you're doing across the entire state, and especially in 7 targeted counties, we'd be willing to give you money. Boy, this would be very, very cost effective. If we're going to do something, let's at least do it the most cost effective way. And I agree with that. So in any case, there was $12 million in the bill. Now, we know that the governor of Florida has line item veto. He went through and line item vetoed 205 items. And included was this $12 million for the National Veterans Homeless Support Group. I understand that everybody's got their own pet peeve about special interests, et cetera. And some people, you know, kind of feel for the veterans, but at the same time, getting more of these folks back into the society and work environment, they're not all people who are drunks and drug addicts. Many people that really, truly are down their luck, and as the interviewee in this clip I'm going to play says, that once you end up in this spot, it's very hard to get out of it. And so I know that George Taylor doesn't go out there looking for dishonorably discharged veterans, only honorably discharged who are really trying and are willing to work at this. He comes out there and finds them sitting there with a bottle of cheap wine or whiskey sitting between their legs, passed out. Not going to get his help unless they want his help and want to get away from that. But they're very effective in what they do. So I'm going to play this clip here of George Taylor actually being interviewed on Channel 13, which is, I believe, a local Fox News maybe, and it broadcasts all throughout Orlando and across the Space Coast, and he actually took this reporter into the woods to meet a homeless couple that the gentleman had been in the military, and we'll give this a shot. And also, you can always go to our webpage, usaradionetwork.com, and actually go to my page, Tom, the American Hour page, and you'll see a link to the NVHS right there on my page so you can find out more about them and get involved if you're so inclined. But here he is, George, talking about the recent veto.
17,000 veterans in the state of Florida are homeless. George Taylor used to be homeless after coming home from war 20 years ago, but now is the president of the National Veterans Homeless Support Organization. Sunday, he brought food, bus tickets, and toiletries to this couple. His group was hoping they'd receive $12 million to get homeless veterans off the streets, but the governor said no on Thursday.
We're hoping in the next 3.5 years we can share information and with the governor and educate him on the issues that we face. And I think he's trainable. So I'm not going to give up on him. 3.5 years, I look forward to working with him.
Now the group says they're going to focus on what they're calling a March to a Million. This is a flyer for their campaign.
I was devastated when the governor vetoed our $12 million. So we enacted a March to a Million. 1 million people giving us $1, and we'll make a difference for our veterans.
They say many veterans don't realize all the benefits they're entitled to and say there are way too many of them living on the streets.
It's an absolute heartbreak. I mean, these men and women have, you know, put their lives on the line for us.
And when you get in the cycle where you're living in the woods, it's real tough to get out. And, you know, NVHS is the ones that they try to help you get out. But, you know, they need help too.
In Brevard County, Margaret Cavanaugh, News 13.
All right, Dick, you know, on my end, I've got to admit, being down here in Sao Paulo, that kind of broke up. Did that come across okay up there in the States?
It came across fantastic.
Okay, good, good. I knew it would. Sometimes it's just, I don't hear, hopefully what I'm broadcasting comes out pretty good most of the time, but sometimes it's broken up coming to me. So, and can you hear the fireworks going off in the background? I don't know what's going on, but that's the second time fireworks have gone off here in the city, which is kind of odd, but somebody's celebrating something. In any case, I kind of like the way George Taylor put it. He said, we think the governor is trainable. He's new at his job, so we're going to keep working with him on this homeless veteran issue. But you heard that they've started a program called the A March to a Million, and the idea is if a million people just simply give $1, they'll have $1 million to work with, and they can start expanding at least into the other 7 counties that have a significant homeless population. Right now they just work with Brevard County, but they'd like to expand into 7 other counties, which are really all in Central Florida right there around the – you know, if you look at the Orlando area and expand out around, you're going to find those 7 counties for the most part. So that's something that if anybody's interested in being a part of the March to a Million with the NVHS, go to the website. usaradionetwork.com/tom.htm. So just go to usaradionetwork.com and click on my page, and you'll see the link there. And they'll, you can donate via PayPal in a lot of different ways. You could just even mail them a dollar bill. It would be really helpful to them, and they're going to continue to work. George, I spent 2 days with George this past weekend. We met at the VFW in Titusville for a little bit, and then at Post 359 of the American Legion down towards Cocoa on Sunday. And we talked about this, and he was pretty disappointed last week, but then he got a lot of calls from a lot of folks, both in the state government and outside of it, even lobbyists saying, don't worry about it. We got other avenues. We may still be able to get you that money. The state wants to give you the money. The state wants to take care of this problem. The state wants to do it in a very effective and efficient manner. And the NVHS has proven that it's capable of that. So I played that because George asked me on Sunday at 5 p.m. today, take a look at it. Hopefully I wasn't too over, that I was tactful in the way I said that. And I think he was. What did you think, Dick?
I thought he was real tactful, yes.
I
wonder, does the governor really know what he vetoed when he got rid of that?
No, I doubt it. I seriously doubt it, yeah.
Well, this is what I'm wondering, and if it was explained to him exactly who this group is, what they have done, and what they're going to do in the future, I would think he would very strongly reconsider the veto on that. It's you look at some of our charitable organizations, the CEOs of these charitable organizations are making millions and still asking for people to donate money. Here you've got something where everybody is donating their time, and all of the money goes to the veterans to get them help. That is something that the governor really has to look at.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's full of volunteers. And there are some other avenues that will help that project as well. George has been selected as the homeless veterans coordinator for the VFW for the entire state. So he's got that avenue he's going to be working with. And then he's got lots of groups and organizations from the American Legion, the local VFW chapters, to even the state, the counties, individual counties, that are adopting NVHS as their vehicle for dealing with homeless vets. And this all relies on the concept of volunteers doing this. So, again, it keeps the cost very low. The high majority, I mean, I think he said his cost expense was like 7%, something like that. So everything else goes to the vets and working to get them out of the woods, off the streets, and back into society and working again and productive and living a happy life, the kind of life they probably really want to live. So great organization. Can't say enough about them. That's why there's a link on the website. It's been there for some time, and I've done ads for them in the past, and I thought, well, let's just have George himself. He's going to be on the show here maybe next week, if not the week after. We're going to get him on the show to talk about what's going on, and he's very up on legislative affairs both at the state and the federal level. So he's a good guy to have on and talk about these issues, and we'll promote that with the veterans groups to make sure that folks can listen in that are interested in this. But I think it should be of interest to everybody. All right, Dick, we're out of time. I'm going to give you the final word.
Before you go, Tom, in my short memory, if I'm wrong, I'm sorry, did you announce about your show next week that will be on Monday and Wednesday only?
I think I did at the beginning of the show, but, you know, my memory's getting short, too. We will be, I talked about going to our summer schedule, which will be Monday and Wednesday. So Monday we can jump back into the fray in case things have gone on over the weekend. Wednesday we'll celebrate by, again, talking about what's going on. And just like our legislators who take off on Thursday to head home and don't legislate on Friday and usually don't legislate on Monday either because that's when they're coming back into town, we're going to pretend that we're politicians, Dick. We're going to basically just work 2 days a week, and I think that's enough to cover what our politicians are doing to us since they only work 2 days a week.
Yes.
So, yeah, that's going to be our summer schedule because we've got spouses and children and friends and family that want to travel and get together and do things because it's summertime. So that'll be our summer schedule. But when the fall comes around, season starts heating up, that's when we'll probably be back, I would say, at least 4 days a week.
Yeah. All right.
But don't hang up, Nick, because nobody knows this out there, but you called in as the host, since I can't use that number from down in Brazil. And then once we're done closing out the show, then feel free to hang up, because I'm actually working the switchboard, even though you called in as the host. But in any case, have a great night. Thanks for joining us, Dick. A pleasure as always. Tell Ann I said hi, and we will see you again soon. Actually, I'll be up at the – okay, here I am going on again. But on the 16th of June, I'll be in town for the dedication of the new hangar at the Tyco Air Museum, the new Vietnam Memorial Hangar, which is dedicated to our Vietnam aircraft there at Tyco. So I'll be there. Don't know if I'll be in flight suit or not, but we may be doing that. We'll see. But so maybe we'll get it together then. But in any case, look forward to it. And we'll be back tomorrow at 4 p.m. as usual. Good night, everybody.
You have a great evening, Tom.
Thanks, Dick.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to the American Hour with Commander Tom Garcia on the USA Talk Radio Network.